down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Harris.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, what I was hearing just now, the lady start the minibus association, they're up in their bus here between next summer, where they meet Miss Morley or not.
That's not the interpretation of what they said.
Oh, I thought that was like, I thought that was
they said they'd be asking for that. They didn't say that they will be unilaterally imposing it.
Oh, well, I would wonder if they've got a legal right to do that. But, this minibus thing, you know, regardless of where you put them there, they get complaining, regardless of you do. Because them always complaining, right? Then they want all sort of incentives. Oh, the next thing they know, they want the government to pay them insurance and pay for their road taxes, detail, and all sort of thing. But they are real greedy. Why do you have them?
But you don't really believe that if there has been an increase in petrol, that it will impact on them. I mean, you see it as all greed, but there's that other side to it.
Yeah, but every minute I'm watching, they ask for incentive all the time. If they ask me, they ask for incentives. But other people go up here.
No, but they can ask, but then the people to whom they're making the request have to take their interests into consideration and the interests of other people, the government's interests, the public's interests, you know. So, I mean, it is for them to identify what they see as important to them and for them to put their request to government and for government to respond as it sees, as it considers it to be appropriate.
I think that ain't right. There's another point I want to raise you, Mr. When this 17.0% is supposed to come off.
When is what?
This 17.5%, did you say that it's supposed to come off from 17.5% to 15%?
You mean the VAT?
The VAT, yeah.
I don't know that in general terms. You mean this was a promise in the manifesto?
Yeah, it was the idea about the manifesto.
Well, there's no timetable for that right now.
Oh, I thought it was mentioned in the budget.
I don't recall that. I think the what was mentioned had to do with the hotels.
Oh.
Not the general reduction in VAT just yet. Okay?
Okay.
Let's move to another call. Thank you very much. Somebody writes to say that, as far as they are concerned, the church is a bit too late on the lesbian business. They should have been outspoken about it during the election campaign. Whatever they say now, it will still be legalized. And I know you will not read this. I wonder what's so harmful about this that you can't read it. And in any case, I mean, this whole question of the revival of all of this focus on the gay lifestyle, and I see that the LGBT lobby has become more strident. If you look at some of the comments which you're seeing now, I saw something written last week about an incident in a tent, and now they're coming out in a way that I think is much stronger than I've seen in Barbados before. I suppose to a large extent emboldened by what has been happening elsewhere and pressure that is being applied to us from other countries on the way that we treat people from that community. And there's a lot of furor at the moment over Billboard's song and whether he will be asked to take out a line that says that you can't change your gender. For them, that's a major issue because they believe that you can change your gender. People actually go and get operations to effect that kind of change. So let's see where it goes. The evangelical churches put together a united front yesterday to condemn what they see as a move, this gay pride parade that is set for the 21st. And we just have to look and see where Barbados is going in this regard. Down to brass tacks. It's highly controversial. Hello? For some. Hello. Yes, you're on the air.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, hi.
Thank you for taking my call. Congratulations to you, Ms. Motley, on a good interview.
Thank you.
I thank her for being so thorough in her explanation of certain things. I wish her well, because I know she's going to become a good prime minister. She's on the road. She has a lot of work to do, but she'll get it done. Now, I have one problem. This noise legislation that I hear talking about, is it going to include kite flying, or do you know that or not?
I would expect that if you are seeking to deal with noise, that these kites that are flying around the neighborhoods with these bulls
24 hours a day.
As a matter of fact, I really think these are the small areas that, though small, are significant, that the society is turning a blind eye to. I mean, why is it that nothing can be done about this? Why is it that people can be doing this in communities day after day, night after night?
Well, people can't sleep. The kids going back to school next month.
It should not be happening. It should not be happening.
Years ago, it was only at Easter time. No, it is happening every day and night. And the parents, they can't tell the kids not to play after certain times when the sun goes down. I don't know what happened here.
Because parents, if it is children, because sometimes they're pretty mature people involved in doing that nonsense, you know. But when you're dealing with children, parents need to be able to remind their children that they have a responsibility to look after the interests of others in their community. And that is one way of respecting the fact that there are people who have a difficulty with these big kites and their big bulls keeping noise all night.
And they are making the bulls out of plastic, they said, and that is what causing the noise to be so... You know,
where do you live and where are you hearing it?
Right here in between Halls Road and Martindale's Road. Right, you pass here now, you two or three kites in the air and they're keeping so much noise. Made out of plastic, the bulls are out of plastic, not out of paper anymore. And that's what you've been taking them and they keep as much noise you got, you can't sleep. All right, so
I know what you're talking about because I also hear it from somebody out there in the area of Lodge Hill, Eden Lodge as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
And some time ago, a lady from Strathclyde was complaining. She spoke to me on the radio about that. So I hope that it will stop, all right? I hope the authorities can do something about it. Thank you very much. God bless.
Thank you. Hello?
Good afternoon. Mr. Ellis?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
How are you?
Commissioner, how are you, sir?
What happened to your voice? You had a cold or something?
No, ma, I had the pot and the thing and the heat in the kitchen. I have to open up the vendors and the door, you know, the vendors, because out the stove and then I got gas. Why you so?
So what I got to do with your voice?
I ain't.
Well, you got me surprised here. Homie, what that has to do with changing your voice?
I wonder if because I drink it early when it's morning, change the voice. I drink one with my coffee, so could be that.
You drank it with the coffee? You didn't drink it straight?
Yeah, that's a professional. I try to come back with a cup of black coffee and a dash of, it could be white rum or colored rum. I tell you something, man. You move the earth to please. It energizes you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, like it changed your voice too.
Yes, sir. You know, there's a song I want you to play for this to scrap over. All right, I'd be playing a lot of local music, but I think this song should slip in for this time of the year or what time, or what's going on in the country. Dennis Johnson, know what he's talking about. There's a gentleman, he's one of my favorite Calypsonians. He's in Grenada. His name is Black Wizard, the mighty Black Wizard. And he have a tune called the IMF. I need that to be played. I can tell you why. He got a verse there that he says that the control, if you want my money, you have to control them unions. I say that to say this. Now, I'm going to accept upset person. Here's me at the age of 64. Thank God that my school children, when I say goodbye, you know, they're 30, 32 and 26. How on earth you can come and give me a $21 raise increase? And out of that, you're taking out a health levy.
But you know, you guys are talking as though Barbados is in this healthy position, you know. I thought that we all understood that the Barbados economy is under severe pressure, and many people in this country recognize that more sacrifice is going to be needed. So it is in that context that these additional taxes have been applied. The critical concern here is that we have been taxed year after year after year since 2010. And what people are looking to see is whether this approach to the taxation can be perceived as more a fairer distribution of it. But more significantly, what you want is to be able to target areas that can ultimately satisfy the need for us to get the additional money from the International Monetary Fund. And then to apply that in such a way that we can see the required growth in the Barbados economy, recognizing that it is no longer business as usual in many areas. We are going to have to do some things differently. So to have people call and say, oh, there is more taxation. Yes, there's more taxation, but it is all taken within a particular context that the economy has been under pressure for quite a long time. And we have been told that, yes, if we want to get this, you know, if you want to get the assistance from the International Monetary Fund, there are certain things that they've been telling us ever since that we need to do.
Yeah. All right. Now, my next one. You know, they always say that when they remove the National Social Responsibility Levy, that the price is going to come down in the supermarket. Well, let me tell you something, not to me. Now, I think about 2-3 weeks ago, I bought a tin of Froger coffee. The one, not the instant one, the one that's putting the coffee
percolator. Folgers.
Folgers, yes. Mm-hmm. I bought it for $21. Wait, God, don't so fast. When you stay home, I just put a little coffee and it's doing my chores and things around the place. I just put a little coffee.
You ain't only buy coffee, though.
Yeah, you wait now. I said, before I run out, let me get another tin yesterday. Another tin, it's gone to plastic thing. All to my surprise, from $21 to $25. From $21 to $25. I've decided $21 and maybe $0.25. Mama, that's a massive, massive jump. And furthermore, Mr. Ellis, you know, I tell you something. That since Mr. Barra and all of them got Mr. Barra and Mr. St. John, not Mr. St. John, the Barras and the Adams. You know the days when we used to get, when you have civil servants getting back money. You remember those days, the North often used to target the man on the Barmy Sally scale, where he would get $1,000 and down, $2,000 and down thing. I find in Barbados now that back pay deteriorating. And yeah, they sit now at my 2 cents, and you can tell me $325. The last money I get before David tell us goodbye to ever with the Lord, he give me $500 in change. Then I hear that we should thank God for it, that he can help with the school children, and of course I don't know what to call the word, but thank God I ever sent my school children out of that day. Because I can tell you, my school children is still going to school. Now my daughter in the days. Let me say it was still Robert Secondary School. Now, I couldn't get a ready-made dress for her. I had to go and buy the yard, and pay it to a seamstress or a tailor. That is more money. Now, in them days, now I could get a pair of shoes that I had gaiters for $100 or somebody from the same Pilgrim Cape Travel. Do you remember the days of the gaiters? I don't see them. Now, nowadays, now you're looking out for a pair of shoes for a child. $200, maybe up to $300. So I don't see anywhere, any day and day that that $300 that somebody sent can give me, that gone like husband and came fire. Now, another thing, too. A few Sundays was in St. Philip's family. I kept my two gas bottles to get gasoline. One for the vegetables and mix up, and then the plane went for the lawnmower. All the money surprised, and I pull up with the bicycle. I tell the lady, pull up with two of them. But that left that one, don't carry right up to the brim, because I got to get room to put in the two-stroke all the way, I call it. A woman charged me for road, I had to pay road taxes. And what hurt me, I pull up, and I ain't going to put the gasoline on the bicycle.
She charged you what? Road tax?
I get, but what she does, she asked for a bill. I told her, this ain't right. She told me I had to pay a road tax, and the gasoline on the bicycle.
But that's because it was on the gasoline. You know, it wasn't whether the gasoline was going into the lawnmower or anything of this sort. It was that the money is being paid on gasoline and related products.
Mm-hmm. No, David, I questioning something. But you know, I'm ailing now. I still think, my body's not like one thing, but I still get around, do my thing. I find that I went to my polyclinic twice. And I only get one of the medication. But you had to go and buy the other one. I would like to know from the Minister of Health and other people like myself that we find this. I know for a fact, when you go to the pharmacist at the polyclinic and then got a medication, they tell me that it is not in stock, but I will go and buy it. I don't make the noise. I walk with the people, players. I don't cuss and carry on. I go and buy it. But I find that twice I had to go and buy it. So I want to hear from the Minister of Health, who is responsible for that agency, why me and other people, and younger, you know, 64, got to be bad medication. And that category that you should get free medication, this is. But I don't make noise. Why have you got to be paying for medication now? I need someone to come and tell us about that. I'm very concerned.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Somebody else is complaining about the number of bull kites in their neighborhood. This person says that they live in the Goodlands in Michael area. And as far as they're concerned, they're told that big men are the owners of the kites, not the children. He said, we don't mind hearing the kites at least for a month, but not for 12 months, day and night. They say it is awful. For 365 days in a year, they have to put up with this, and it needs to be regulated by law. Dr. Brastax, hello?
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes, Mr. Ellis, good morning to you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, someone mentioned about the number at Black Rock Polyclinic.
Yes.
You got the number?
Yes, I do have the number. Just come back to you with it in a short while.
Yeah, but what happened is that this is about 3 weeks now I've been calling there also. And I'd leave and catch a bus and went down there. And I went to the lady to make an appointment. I made the appointment. She told me, well, I'll go to the receptionist and get the number. She don't have it. And I was going to the receptionist. The lady told me that don't walk across there. They're muffing. I said, well, give me the number then. She told me that she don't know the number.
It's 536?
Yes.
3700.
3700?
Yes.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay.
And this kite thing.
Yes.
It's happening down at West Bay Road also.
Many communities are afflicted by it. And it seems, you feel powerless. I thought that was something that ideally...
They got some guys that go there in the St. Leonard's churchyard, and they let out the kites, and it runs all along below my saw shop, all along in this area, all along Petropec Gap. You can hear the kites all night. The ones that in Goodland probably is the ones that the people let out the kites from in the graveyard. You know? Because I pass through their time and going to Barra Park, okay, with also, and he said the guys there, so hiking kites in the West Bay Cemetery. I don't know, it's really annoying though.
It's inconsiderate, okay, it really is inconsiderate.
Yeah, it is.
Especially for the more mature elderly people in our communities who just can't take it. And they're put in positions where they're afraid to say anything at all about it.
You know, another thing also, years ago when they first started these shows at Kesley and Oval, they used to come around in the community and give some of the people in the community like tickets, free tickets, for the noise that was being keeping. But I don't hear about that anymore. And when these shows start, sometimes the practice is the day before. You know, then when the shows come off, they go right through to the morning, you know. And you don't get any returns at all.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, sir, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
One of your previous callers not long ago is complaining about medication he have to buy. You know, it's getting me so aggravated to hear people complaining about these things. I have been living... Are you there?
Yes, I'm listening.
I've been living overseas for many years now. And you have, even though you go to the hospital, you have to pay a fee. You have to buy your medication. And I don't understand why we people in Barbados think that we have to live free all the time. I believe this is the only West Indian country that we can do it. Huh? Don't these people understand what we are going through in this economical country now that we have to live in? Why are people so... I don't want to call the name. But it just gets me so sick and tired and set up. We cannot expect to live free for the rest of our lives. This country is in a financial state. And we, as the Prime Minister says, we all have to pull our weight. If we want to get out of these situations, we have to do what we have to do. We have to do it with the help of the Almighty and with the help of the Prime Minister. It's only a couple months this lady gets in there. And people are complaining, not giving her a chance to see what will happen. I mean, we went through for the last 10 years of so much corruption in this place. Huh? And we had to hold our bellies, squeeze our belts, every kind of thing. Water bills went up. Everything went up. And everybody was relaxed with it. No concern. But
I don't think that you were listening to what people were saying in Barbados in that period. I do not accept that Barbadians were saying nothing. A lot of people were complaining about it. And where politicians get caught is when they give people the impression that once elected, they will be able to make a positive change in the situation. If that is the impression that people get, then when you come to power and it appears as though, or not only appears, but when you definitely have to go in the opposite direction, that's when you get caught. And you breed frustration and disappointment. And that is, you got to talk to the public after that quite a lot to get them to understand the circumstances that have forced you in that direction. So I don't, this is not, as you painted, a situation where people said nothing before and now they're complaining. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We're coming back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. On the line with us right now, economist Carlos Fort, who is based in Canada. He's on the line with us. Good afternoon, Carlos.
Hi, good afternoon, Ms. Ellis.
Yes, how are you?
Barbadians. I'm doing well. And you?
From that distance, we've got the IMF talking to us in Barbados now. They've recently been here and gone back to look more seriously at coming up with a program. We've had the budget. It's described as a mini budget by some. I don't know how you see it. But overall, what's your assessment of what's happening with the Barbados economy right now?
Well, I'm eagerly looking forward to the central bank's report on the first half of the year's performance. As it relates to the budget, it's probably a misnomer that it was referred to as a mini budget. In many ways, it was a mega budget. I think the budget was reflected a recognition of basically the fiscal consolidation that is absolutely needed. It sought to augment what was already announced with respect to the debt restructuring exercise, which, when completed, would facilitate some significant fiscal consolidation by saving us our interest obligations. Of course, even though the budget and the budget, the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance touted the expenditure cuts, there aren't genuine expenditure cuts in the sense that what the government has done is essentially move off the books of the central government some of its significant expenditures pertaining to the Sanitation Service Authority, the QEH, and the tourism-related entities, and pretty much impose some user fees that would be, and some taxation that would provide some dedicated funding for those institutions. That is some creative, I would say, economics and accounting, but I support those initiatives, but I think it would be perhaps disingenuous to describe them as expenditure cuts or expenditure reduction.
The critical question here, though, is to what extent are we seeing any difference in policy approach from what obtained under the Democratic Labour Party?
Well, there's a significant difference in policy approach in the sense that you have the new administration has been quite decisive, but also very swift in addressing some of the attendant issues that the government has been grappling with for quite some time now.
But that's only a question of speed.
But I think policy certainty is important. We've had a clear articulation of the policy direction that the government is focused on, the new government, as well as the objectives. The extent of communication with the public has been very good. It removes the prospect for a lot of speculation and basically a vacuum and an uncertainty. But you've had some clear and concerted decisions being taken. The decision to suspend debt payments to foreign debt payments and the announcement of the debt refinancing program, that is a significant development. The previous administration contemplated doing so, and I believe in their 2016 budget they would have announced what you can describe as a pilot program, roughly, I think it was $70 million of the debt that, held by the National Insurance Scheme that they were going to consider refinancing. We didn't get any further information on that. So that is definitely significant. Of course, the budget imposed some new taxes, abolished others. That is significant because of the type of reallocation of resources and priorities that it reflected. And in some ways, though, you can say that the budget isn't that dissimilar from a budget that Chris Sinclair could have brought or may have brought in the past, in that it focused predominantly on revenue.
Precisely.
Raising revenue.
So that's with the question about policy differences. And in addition to that, there are some people who balked at the whole idea of a default. How do you respond to the explanation which has been given by the Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, suggesting that it was that or run out of reserves?
There's a legitimate concern that I'm sure the government would have been seeking to mitigate. To say run out of reserves may be a bit hyperbolic, but definitely the reserves, if those debt payments that were due at the end of June were paid, the reserves would have been significantly low with the prospect of oil prices continuing to rise. So the government would have been, if it had honored those obligations, it would have been in a pretty tight situation. And when you when you couple, contrast that against what appears so far as some cessation with respect to going ahead with the sale of the Hilton Hotel, it then means that some of the expected foreign exchange that would have been likely to come in under the previous administration would not have been on the cards. In any event, though, the truth is that we probably should have gone the route of debt restructuring since 2013 or 2014. I did something that was absolutely necessary. And it's really a question of how soon, maybe the government moved much sooner than many would have expected, but it definitely is necessary. And the fact is that debt refinancing, debt restructuring, it really does involve a selective default. And it's better to do it that way, where it can be orderly and negotiated, than the country finding itself in a position where it cannot honor its obligations and it actually does default.
Okay, so from where you sit now, how much more do you anticipate that the IMF will ask of us? Because our assessment is that the government has been trying to anticipate what may be required of it by the IMF and is putting that in place. But how much more do you anticipate we may be demanded of us from and by the IMF?
I think the government has a pretty good idea. There's been a series of Article 4 consultations, apart from the fact that over the course of the last decade, certainly the last 5 years, many economists, both local economists, international economists, Barbadian economists, based outside of Barbados, have really been not just diagnosing the problems that the economy faces, particularly the fiscal challenges that the government faces. But a lot of the recommendations have been put on the table, and I don't think they're a secret what those recommendations are. Of course, one of those would be the debt restructuring that we just spoke about, but reducing the transfers and subsidies, which largely go to statutory corporations. There's a component of that which goes to the government essentially funding or financing out of the consolidated fund the pensions of retired public servants. And as it relates to that, the IMF has spoken to this in the past. I have written about it. And I think there's going to be the necessity to have funded pensions going forward for public servants. Currently, funding obligations are pension obligations are unfunded in the public service, and they're essentially paid out to the consolidated fund. I think we're going to have to reach the stage of a pension reform where you have public servants contributing toward their pensions, as well as the government contributing toward those pensions as well, in the same way that we contribute in terms of NIS pensions across the board, that type of arrangement. But certainly, as it relates to the statutory corporations, it's over $1 billion, I believe, of transfers to those entities. And as the Prime Minister indicated in the budget, and as the IMF indicated at the wrap-up of their last mission there, the next phase is going to contemplate how the government reduced those transfers to statutory corporations. And the best way to do that isn't to have arbitrary across-the-board cuts, but to have reforms of those entities. Some of them may need restructuring, others may need to be divested of.
There's a question here which has been asked, which is, in going to the IMF for support, what, in your judgment, is the level of support that you think Barbados would need at this stage as an economist?
In terms of the quantum?
Yes.
I can't remember the exact quota limit. There's a maximum that all countries can access. And I recall reading in the press a few weeks ago, Minister Kerry Simmons indicated that the option that the government was seeking to pursue with the IMF was an extended funding facility arrangement as opposed to the standby arrangement, which is a shorter term arrangement that the standby arrangement.
So you will have to be meeting specific targets and stuff over a period.
Yes, but the advantage about the extended funding facility is that you can access a larger amount of funding support, but you also do so over a longer period of time. So we're talking about 3 years in the first instance, with the possibility of extending to about 5 years or so. And what that does, by having a longer period of time, it means that the adjustment would not have to be as severe or significant as would otherwise be the case under a standby arrangement, for example. But what it also means is that you have more time, a longer period of time, to repay those loans when they come due. I don't want to be definitive in this figure, but I think we could potentially, the figure that we may potentially be able to access, maybe in the region of $500 million. Of course, that would not be in one instance, because the IMF releases the funds in tranches once certain milestones or targets are met.
Yeah. Anyhow, we're going to have to wrap you up there. Economist Carlos Fort speaking with us from Canada. And thanks to all the other contributors to today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks to Dennis Johnson. And I wish you all a great afternoon and an even better weekend. Be safe.